First, I do want to say that I have no financial or commercial relationships to disclose. So what I want to tell you about my presentation is it's twofold. So the first part, I'm going to talk to you about a public engagement project that the Massachusetts Department of Public Health did. And for the second part, I'm going to detail how recommendations derived from those public engagement meetings help to inform our public information strategies and outreach during the H1N1 response. So a little bit about the public engagement project. It really started out as a hypothetical situation in its initial planning stages. So our intention was to ask public participants to imagine a scenario in which there's an influenza pandemic. So at the time, it really was hypothetical since it had been many years since we'd had an influenza pandemic. And then we were going to ask participants to imagine a more severe pandemic in which it was necessary for the government to implement altered standards of care. And we gave some examples of what that would look like. We wanted the public to think about and discuss the following questions. What kinds of information, advice, or instructions did they want to know before and during a pandemic that would make them and their communities feel safe and prepared? And then also, how would they want to receive that information? And so as you know, the project got underway, the hypothetical quickly turned into the real as the real-life, real-time H1N1 situation unfolded. And by the time the public engagement meetings took place, H1N1 was really in the public conscience. We were able to quickly turn recommendations from the meeting into real-life communication practices. So as you can see here, Massachusetts was one of six state-level projects funded on pandemic influenza by CDC. And so our focus was on public information, as I said. And like a lot of projects of this sort, we involved a diverse and broad range of stakeholders from various backgrounds, and we held a series of meetings with them. And these meetings yielded some emerging themes, and within the emerging themes, there were a number of recommendations. And I'm going to quickly go over those themes and recommendations with you. So the three themes I'm going to discuss today are trustworthiness of information, increasing compliance with public health advice and guidance, and the distribution of information. So within trustworthiness of information, these were four of the recommendations that came out. So one was to coordinate clear and consistent messages, even as those messages were refined based on a changing situation. The second was to quickly address rumors and false reports. Next, provide timely, accurate, and appropriate information from trusted sources. And last, to provide clear information about limited resources and shortages, and also the decision-making process for determining, how those resources would be allocated. When we look at the theme of increasing compliance with public health advice and guidance, these recommendations came out. Develop a method for explaining personal risk and the triggers for increasing risk. Provide information about what's occurring in Massachusetts, and then also at the more specific local level. Emphasize the rationale and importance of adhering to CDC, Department of Public Health, and local health department interventions and recommendations. And also develop clear and understandable information on the flu vaccine in terms of prevention and personal risk. And last, we get to the distribution of information. So recommendations included continuing to use those traditional pre-established channels like TV, radio, newspapers, flyers, and schools. There were also recommendations to use some of these new emerging technologies such as Facebook, Twitter, and text messaging. There was a lot of feedback about providing information to teachers and daycare providers so that they would teach and practice preventive strategies in schools. And what participants were saying was that, an additional benefit was that students would learn this information and get this education at school, and they in turn would go home and teach the other adults and family members about this information. And the last recommendation was to ensure that information is presented in multiple languages and formats. And so what we did was we took many of these recommendations from the public engagement meetings, and we incorporated them into our public information strategies and outreach during our H1N1 response. And so I'm going to detail some of those efforts for you now. So one of the recommendations from the meetings was that we coordinate clear and consistent messaging. And to that effect, DPH held weekly or biweekly conference calls with specific audiences for the duration of the pandemic. And so these calls were dedicated to those particular audiences and their issues or concerns that were relevant to them and their constituents. And so some of the groups involved on these calls include local public health departments, hospitals and community health centers, healthcare providers, school administrators and school nurses, and public safety officials. One of the other recommendations that came out from the public engagement meetings was the need to quickly address rumors and false reports. And so what we did was we utilized a blog on our website, which really was an instant resource for responding to those rumors and misinformation, particularly about issues like vaccine safety and vaccine availability, which were those hot button topics that were really of a lot of interest to the public. And so I don't know if you can see the headline here on this blog posting, but it's dated October 21st, 2009, and the headline reads, H1N1 Vaccine Imprisons, Setting the Record Straight. And this was a posting by our commissioner at the Department of Public Health, and the first paragraph is just two sentences, and it reads, you've probably seen the incorrect media reports stating that the Department of Public Health intends to make the H1N1 vaccine available to prison inmates before it is available to members of the general public. These reports are misleading and factually inaccurate. So really, we utilized the blog to very quickly address misinformation and potential misperceptions and really let people know, you know, what the accurate and true state of flu was in the state at the time. An additional recommendation from the public engagement meetings was to have messages delivered through trusted sources. And so what we did at DPH was we established a single public face of DPH for our flu messaging. And the person that we decided to use was our DPH medical director. She's a pediatrician, she's a mother, and she's African American. She was used very extensively in PSAs that were played aggressively during morning news programs like Good Morning America and The Today Show. She also was readily available for media events and press conferences. And so by establishing her as our singular public face for the delivery of key messages, it really helped us to build credibility among key audiences. And actually yesterday when I was at the airport waiting for my plane, in between a commercial on the football, during the football game, there was a commercial for the season for seasonal flu, and the DPH medical director was giving out our messaging. So we're continuing to use her, you know, going forward so that people recognize her and really are dedicated to the messages that she's putting out there. Additionally, DPH was really committed to being transparent and explaining the reasons for vaccine shortages and also the logic behind priority groups. And one of the recommendations from the engagement meetings was clear and consistent messaging throughout all levels of government. So we're talking from the federal to the state and to the local level. So in the example of H1N1 vaccine, when supply was overestimated and vaccine was underdelivered because of manufacturing delays, the state received and followed CDC guidance and communicated this to the public. So when, for example, when initial supplies of the vaccine were arriving, CDC was telling the public that the first doses were going to be going to pregnant women. The state followed suit in its messaging, and if and when the local health departments were able to stand up flu clinics, their messaging was the same. So there you see consistent messaging through all levels of government. So looking at increasing compliance, we at DPH developed a comprehensive flu facts campaign which emphasized four key basic messages about preventing the spread of flu, and what you see up there is kind of, that's the marketing, the brand marketing for the campaign. And those four key messages were getting both the seasonal and H1N1 flu shot, covering your mouth when you cough or sneeze, washing your hands often, and staying home if you're sick. And in every communication that DPH put out to the public, whether it was posters, you know, blog postings, PSAs, public appearances, we really, really reinforced those messages. You know, we had some serious market saturation with that. And part of the messaging included the needs to get both flu shots and the reasons why. And this spoke to one of the recommendations from the meetings, which was to present clearly understandable information about the flu vaccine in terms of prevention and risk. So another recommendation from public engagement was providing information about what's happening in Massachusetts and more local information as well. And so what we did was we utilized our blog again. And the blog really is a unique and user-friendly tool for us that let us explain the impact of flu in Massachusetts. And it really was kind of the go-to destination for the most up-to-date information about the flu. And so what we did was we posted weekly reports on influenza-like illness. And these weekly ILI reports, they weren't just a data dump or a numbers presentation. By utilizing the blog, it really provided us with the ability to give additional context, to explain what the numbers meant, to let people know, you know, which segments of the population appeared to be more severely impacted by the flu. And the blog was also a great opportunity to create two-way dialogue with residents. You know, at DPH, we have a very liberal policy in terms of blog postings, so any posting that we got from the public was considered public information, and as such, the default position was that it would be posted to the blog. The only exception would be anything that contained racist or defamatory remarks. And I honestly can tell you that there were a number of remarks from the public that, you know, put the department in some negative light. You know, people were, they were afraid, they were concerned, they didn't feel like they were getting the answers they were looking for. And using the blog was a way that allowed DPH to kind of gauge the public's concerns, try to answer those concerns to the best of our ability, and do our best to try to help ease some of those concerns. The weekly ILI report also allowed us to analyze which segments of the population were experiencing higher rates of flu than others, and as such, we then created PSAs that targeted those groups and their specific concerns and did media buys. Massachusetts was actually one of the top-ranked states in terms of H1N1 vaccination rates across the country, and we really would like to think that a large part of that success could be attributed to our vast communications campaign and extensive outreach to those groups that typically do have lower vaccination rates. So when we talk about the distribution of information, it shouldn't come as any surprise that we did continue to use a lot of those traditional pre-established channels like TV, radio, newspapers, flyers, because a lot of people still do receive their information that way. But working off of one of the recommendations from the public engagement meetings, we also did incorporate a lot of non-traditional and emerging methods. So we routinely, we used the DPH blog extensively. We blogged in English, but we also routinely blogged in Spanish and Portuguese. And at the department, we're very fortunate that we have a director of ethnic media who is fluent in both Spanish and Portuguese, so he would do all of that blogging. We provided daily Twitter updates. We had about 2,500 followers. And we also did a lot of podcast recordings. We had podcasts in English, but we also used podcasts largely to reach non-English-speaking populations. And the podcasts were really a force multiplier for us. We would post the MP3 files in digital format on the website where users could just go and click on them and listen to them. Additionally, we would send the MP3 files to ethnic radio stations for broadcasting, which would air them as PSAs. And then last, we would take transcripts of those podcasts, send them to ethnic newspapers, which would often run them as articles. So we really got a good bang for our buck in terms of the podcasts. You know, DPH has always had partnerships with the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education, and we really partnered extensively with them to provide guidance documents, posters on flu prevention, and a lot of other tools that could be used both in the classrooms and at home to help educate students, parents, and their family members. And, you know, there was a lot of collaboration and cooperation that took place between those groups, and it's really been very beneficial to us, and we've seen that those relationships have endured in the time since H1N1. And so last, you know, one of the recommendations was for us to create materials in multiple languages. You know, from research that we've done, we found that creating materials in English, Spanish, and Portuguese in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts covers 95% of the population, which is great. But we also routinely create materials in additional languages, like Chinese, Vietnamese, and Haitian Creole. And for H1N1, we had some key documents, like our H1N1 fact sheet, that we had translated into 15 languages. Feedback from our partners really indicated that these documents that we provided in multiple languages were incredibly well received by members of the community, and there was a lot of interest in us creating as many documents as we could in as many additional languages as possible, and certainly we tried to accommodate the best that we could, because it is incredibly important to us to get as much information as we can into the hands of the public, particularly into the hands of people that we might not be able to reach all of the time. So we want our messages to be far-reaching, and it continues to be a priority for the department. So, you know, to quickly wrap, I just want to say, you know, what began as a hypothetical scenario for us for a public engagement project really turned into a unique and real-time opportunity to gauge the public's desires for public information and to help meet those needs immediately. We found that the recommendations were incredibly beneficial for our H1N1 response, and certainly we recognize that their utility extends just beyond only influenza pandemic and can be used in the years to come. So thank you very much.